HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
So today I'm joined by Laura Phelan. Laura is Director of Human Capital Solutions at Aon here in Dublin. Laura, how are you? Very welcome.
Great. Thanks, Declan. Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. And thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Laura, do you want to actually just give a quick overview of what you guys in Aon do?
Yeah, perfect. Well, as you said, I work in the Human Capital Solutions part of Aon. So really, our focus is all about the future world of work. So what that looks like in terms of what people do at work, where people are working, and how they need to behave in order to be successful and thrive at work in now and into the future. So that's what we do in Human Capital Solutions.
Fantastic. So obviously a busy time. Part of the reason you guys are on today is to talk about that very subject. What's happening out there? What are your clients coming to you about? What's their worries? What's their thoughts? Give me an overview of what's going on in that space.
Sure. Yeah. And as you rightly say, this is a really topical conversation at the moment, partly because there's so many headlines out there. There's a lot of organizations making big statements about their intentions about the future of the office, right from, you know, all extremes. So, you know, wanting everybody back full time as soon as possible, right through to saying that people can work anywhere, anytime, as long as they get their objectives delivered. So, you know, it can be unsettling for people, or, you know, when they read such big headlines. And what we're finding is a lot of organizations, while they have workforces and task forces and people working on this, they haven't necessarily come to the conclusion yet as to what's right for them. Because, of course, the answer is going to be different for every firm and every organization. I suppose our approach when we're talking to clients is to be led by the data. It's all very well to kind of make a big statement about what way you might want the workforce to be shaped in the future. But we really strongly believe that it needs to be a data-led decision, because these are significant decisions that impact on everybody, both current employees, but also the ability to attract new talent into the organization in the future as well. So we would always encourage people to look at the data that they have, look at the roles, understand what roles can be done in a remote way, what roles are best done in the office, and within that, what tasks are best done in an office environment versus out of the office.
Sure. Let's unpack some of that. So when you say led by the data, what sort of data points are you, is that to, well, actually, sorry, let me take a step backwards. What criteria typically are companies using as to decide what their new model looks like?
Yeah, there's lots of different criteria. Some organizations are being led by colleague preference. So what is it that the colleagues want? Some organizations are being led by leader preference and what leaders want. And that's why I suppose I say, look at what the data is telling you. And the types of data points that we look at is role-based and task-based. So within your workforce data, looking at, you know, what are the size of the teams, where are the teams located, where's the leader of a team located, what extent do specific roles need access to physical materials, physical infrastructure, confidential information, what's the level of innovation, collaboration that's required in a role. So looking at all those factors, we have a model that allows us to help organizations define what percentage of roles need to be done on-site versus off-site versus working in a hybrid way. And within that hybrid way, what would a breakdown be like, 1 to 2 days in the office versus 3 to 4 days, and so on. So really, I suppose that's what we would talk about when we talk about data points is within the roles themselves and the tasks, what's the best way to carry out those roles.
Sure. It's interesting when you start looking at that, what roles can be like. So are you seeing a rational argument for jobs returning to the office that have been done remotely for effectively 12 months or over that at this stage? Are you seeing genuine reasons for that? I was interested when you said sort of leader preference as opposed to our colleague preference. Depending on the culture of an organization, there might be a preference on either part to be in an office. I think that can lead to presenteeism and all of that sort of stuff.
Yes. What
sort of rational arguments are there to return to the office to a role that has been done remotely for a long time?
Yeah, what we're finding is when you analyze roles, there are some roles that might have a high degree of innovation, collaboration required. And when you map that and say, right, well, where those roles exist in geographical proximity with other roles within the team doing something similar. So if you had an R&D team, for example, all based in Cork or Athlone or wherever they might be, there's an argument that for some tasks on some at some times that those teams could get together. So it's a combination of the task and also the geographical proximity, because equally you can have an R&D team that you have a couple of people in Dublin, London, Stockholm, wherever they might be, and they can collaborate and innovate perfectly well virtually and remotely as well. So I suppose it's that level of collaboration and innovation that's driving some roles maybe back into the office a little more than other roles, not necessarily full-time. There's very, very few roles that we've analysed that need to be full-time in an office. So taking maybe some of the manufacturing roles or the retail type roles out of it in an office environment, there's very few roles. Maybe some of the tech supports or some of the reception or physical kind of security type roles are the ones that may need more time in the office. But having said that, what we are finding is organizations recognize that from a competitive standpoint and being able to attract people, they want to try to build some flexibility into the roles and the models that they have. So therefore, they're looking at what are the types of levers that they can pull to try to build more flexibility in. And it can be things like, you know, rota systems or, you know, combining the sort of analysis type tasks all into one day so that people could work from home one day a week and be in the other 4 days. There's lots of innovation going around to try to proactively build more flexibility in, because leaders are recognizing that for the future, it's likely that the talented individuals will want that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen, so I can't recall where, so there has been some research done, I think, where especially in the States, where, you know, people are almost saying they wouldn't even apply for a job if there was no work from home sort of option as at least part of it. I'm not saying 5 days a week, but even some part of it. You mentioned colleague preference versus leader preference. Have you seen any things where they were polar opposites, and what was the approach then after that?
Yeah, I have. And what we've actually found is where a colleague wants fewer days in the office, for example, than a leader might expect or want them, that's where this data of the role analysis comes into play. And I think that's even more important in Ireland at the moment with the legislation, you know, allowing people the ability to request to work flexibly. So it's important for organizations to be able to back up whatever decisions that they're going to make. So where a colleague is wanting fewer days than a leader might prefer, you look at the data and say, well, let's look at the breakdown of the tasks within the role, what should be done in the office, and how can we build flexibility for the rest of it. When it works the opposite way, where colleagues are looking for more days in the office, we've done some well-being studies with organizations, and what we for sure are seeing is that colleagues who want more days in the office recognize that they thrive better in an office environment. So you look at the pillars of well-being that we talk about, like physical, social and emotional well-being. Colleagues who score lower on those well-being indicators typically are the ones who are looking for more days. So our advice to organizations to date has been, where colleagues want more days in the office, that really should be facilitated, because it is individuals recognizing that that is where they do their best work.
Yeah, and that's interesting in itself, because if a leadership of a particular organization has realized they don't need a bricks and mortar office in central Dublin, or as where I am at the moment, there's a massive cost saving there. So I'm sure there's an appetite for lots of organizations to you know, shed that cost burden of an office, or to a large part of it.
Yeah.
What sort of solutions have you seen for companies like that? So they're trying to, you know, reduce their footprint, their office footprint, but also they have to facilitate people with a working environment or a physical working location.
What I've seen organizations do is I suppose it's probably early stage for organizations to make radical changes on their real estate footprint, partly because of the lease length of time, and also because we're so early in this whole, you know, what the future of work will really look like.
Yeah, sure.
So what I have seen organizations do at the moment is nearly reconfigure the office space. So getting rid of some of the desks and reducing the person to desk ratio, but reconfiguring the space to have a lot more social innovation, collaboration zones, because that is what it's nearly the role of the office as opposed to the office space in and of itself. So when people come in, they want them collaborating, interacting, working as teams and so on. So therefore, the space needs to be reconfigured to reflect that. So that's what I'm seeing probably in the short term, rather than very massive significant significant decisions about cutting, you know, significant amounts of real estate. Other organizations are looking at kind of hub and spoke models. So they might not have as big a footprint in some of the central expensive locations, but will have other smaller working hubs that people can more easily get to and commute to. For sure, and I think this is well documented. You know, a lot of people have moved out of the urban hubs and out into more rural locations. So therefore, organizations are trying to see how can we get that kind of office, the benefits of an office environment, you know, so that people can get out of their houses and work in other locations without having the commute. So that's another solution that people have looked at. Okay. I think just it's important, I suppose. What we are seeing is firms are looking at this from a range of different lenses. And there's the immediate, how do we kind of get back post-pandemic? But then there's the actual kind of long-term, what is the shape of the workforce that we want in the long-term? Because you might find lots of people want to get back and meet colleagues and do all of that in the short-term, but longer-term, what's the right solution? And looking at things like from a diversity and inclusion perspective, what is going to make it easier to make it as accessible to as broad a range of groups as possible to work, and by taking out things like a commute or physically having to get somewhere, that could open up a whole new cohort of potential talent for the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. It's been brilliant from that point of view. Opening up that broader, like that broader job market, basically, for people who might have difficulty in terms of commuting, etc. So that has been a definite silver lining. Collaboration is something that comes up always as a reason to return to the office. I think it's one of the first cited things whenever you talk to anyone about it, and I do understand why that is. Are we saying that we effectively cannot collaborate remotely?
I don't think so, because we have been doing it. I think probably the technology needs to catch up a little bit, and it has done in the last while. But probably, I think we'll see a lot of innovation and new ideas in the whole technology space and how to help collaborate. So technology is one bit, and also the behaviours. You know, so. How can you facilitate an innovation session where maybe some people are in an office and some people are dialing in? And it's a different skill set than when either everyone is remote or everyone is physically together. So I think that it's not that we can't, but I do think that both behaviorally people need to think through, there's a different skill set coming that in how I manage within this kind of hybrid setup. And also the technology will need to be probably better able to support that kind of collaboration.
And Laura, just as a matter of interest, what sort of technology advancements do you have in mind when you say that?
Oh, people who know me know well that this is definitely not my area of expertise. But I know I've seen some work around kind of virtual reality headsets, so people physically feel as if they're more together. Things like just kind of room setup, so that it's not boardroom style, that there's different cameras and that kind of thing. So I'm not an expert, but I know that there's a lot of conversations happening.
Yeah, sure. Behaviors are interesting, and you know, as you say, there's a whole new skill set developing to facilitate collaboration, but lots of new skills that people are developing or you know, stumbling their way through as we all continue to work remotely primarily. What are your clients seeing, or what have your clients been talking to you about, you know, training in those areas and those sort of soft skills, or even hard skills, but just new ones? What's happening there?
What they're talking about, and we in Aon have actually developed a few behavioural models to help clients on this, so we've developed a model called a virtual worker. So what are the skills that people need to work in a virtual way? So it's kind of defining communication in a virtual world, the agility, curiosity, those kind of behaviours that are going to be important, the self-directed learning, those kind of behaviours. We've also defined what a digital leader needs. So what are the skills that leaders within this kind of technology-driven world might need, but also that kind of inclusivity, because in this hybrid future world of work, it is going to be more and more important that leaders are inclusive in their actions or their behaviours, in their mindset, Because, as I said, there's going to be different people both physically there. And you mentioned, I think, presenteeism earlier on. So how do you make sure that there's an equal career development opportunity for the people that's sitting in front of you versus those that are at home? Or if you're at home, how do you make sure as a leader that you're getting equal opportunities with all your teams and so on? So those are the kinds of behaviours that we're seeing coming through as more and more important. And for sure, what clients and organisations are doing is helping people understand and gain insight into their own strengths in terms of this kind of future way of working and where their own learning might be, because it's in everyone's interest to understand, you know, where might I struggle and what can I do about that, what supports are available. And that's really where our clients are starting from. So, you know, let's take a benchmark of where we are, where we're at, and what individuals need to do to set themselves up for success.
The inclusivity thing, I mean, we discussed briefly the physical barriers of someone getting to an office as being a barrier potentially for inclusivity. What other sorts of things are you seeing, or you know, what other things do leaders need to be aware of, or how can organizations be more inclusive in this remote environment?
I think it's around kind of equality of work experience, really, in a nutshell, is how I'd see that inclusivity piece. So, you know, no matter where you're physically based to do the work, it's incumbent on the leader to make sure that they have visibility of people, that they have interaction, that they have connection with people, and therefore they need that flexibility in their behavioral style to be able to do that in a way where somebody's sitting with them versus, as I said, kind of phone calls or WebExes or Zooms, whatever way they interact. So it's that flexibility of leadership style to provide the equality of a working experience for everyone in their team.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think one worry for, what I think should be a worry for a lot of organizations is having lots of little subcultures and very siloed work experiences for employees, depending on maybe who they work for or what area of the business they work for. If your people leader wants you in the office, or, you know, that presenteeism is rewarded through promotions and opportunities and stuff, whereas another individual has a preference to work from home and maybe thrives from working from home, I think the leadership is really important at that moment in time to make sure that, you know, as you say,
it is an equal
quality of work experience. I like that phrase. I think that's important.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's important to recognize that is it's a huge ask for leaders, you know, and especially, you know, we're just coming out of this, hopefully coming out of this pandemic. It's been a really challenging year for leaders to have to adapt their style so quickly, as well as try to work out, you know, keep the organization going, deliver on objectives, all the usual sort of demands on a leader, as well as totally change how they manage their teams. And now they're about to face into another significant change as we mostly migrate into some kind of hybrid working model, and that is a massive challenge for leaders. And it's important to recognize that and provide the support that people will need, and not just expect that it can happen because it's inevitable.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And my tone was probably more, this is a leader's problem than anything. And in fairness, we're all sort of fumbling our way through this together. So for leaders as well, it's very much all a new way of working, etc. And the talent attraction piece and the retention piece is something that I'm very interested in. The in reality, are we now in a global work marketplace? Sorry, is it a global talent pool now, effectively?
I think that's a hard one to answer, because potentially, yes, although there are particular legal and tax implications. So I don't think it's quite as simple as to say you can recruit anyone from anywhere and they can work from where they are. There are specific tax and legal implications that people have to sort out and work out. But I do think that it's certainly a broader talent pool. By taking out the specific kind of location, 5 days a week, office-based location out of it, that it has broadened the talent pool. But I'm not sure that we're quite ready to say that it is now fully global.
Yeah, it's opened up as well. Like, I mean, just even, you know, people returning to work after breaks for whatever reason, they you know, it's easier, it's more accessible for them. I think, you know, flexible working has been talked about more than ever. Are your clients coming
coming to you with regard to solutions around, are people worried about stuff like the Working Time Act and things like that? You know, a lot of organizations don't have the facilities to really manage. A lot of organizations are saying you can flexibly work, you know, work when you can or work flexibly,
yeah,
but their systems generally don't allow them to record in that manner. Are organizations talking to you about that?
Yes, not kind of specifically about things like Working Time Act and recording time and stuff, but it, more on the basis of, yes, it's all very well and good to say work anywhere, anytime, but in a way it nearly puts more pressure on individuals. And some firms have adopted the, you know, you can take as much annual leave as you want in the year, and giving a lot of you know, empowering people significantly. But there does come a downside to that, because what we're finding is more junior colleagues are looking for more guidance and guardrails, if you like, around, yeah, what actually is okay to do. And sometimes by saying you can take as much annual leave as you like, it's uncapped, people are taking fewer days, yeah, than when they were told to take 25 days, because they're unsure, will it be okay if I go to 20 days or 30 days, or how will this be seen, or if I'm out more often? So sometimes it's just a matter of getting that kind of the balance right between empowering people to make the right decisions for them, but actually ensuring, again, through kind of policies and leader behaviours and supporting people in that decision-making process, that they come to the right decisions for themselves. So yes, the topic is coming up for sure, and how people are talking to us, but it's not around things like Working Time Act. It is, yeah, more about, again, I suppose, because we're psychologists by background, yeah, it course. Is around the behaviours. How do we help people self-manage? And again, going back to, how do we help leaders support that self-management?
One thing you mentioned earlier was just around your, I think you called it your virtual worker behaviors. I know you guys from assessment sort of side of things. I presume that what people now are looking for, they're now assessing at recruitment stage as well for certain new skills. So I presume, yes, it's things you mentioned earlier around communications and agility and being self-directed and things like that. What sort of are the key things that to look out for in the recruitment process to see if people are suitable to, say, virtual working?
Yeah, there's a few things in this, actually, because on a slightly different but related note, is that the whole what people do at work is changing so significantly as well, with increased automation, digital transformation and so on. The actual content of roles are changing every 3 to 5 years. So more and more organizations are assessing less about what they want people to do and more about how they want them to behave, because they think if they get the right people with the right behaviors and the right motivation into the organization, they can adapt to the roles and the demands of the roles as they change. So what we're talking about with most organizations is these foundational skills of curiosity, agility and learnability. Because if you have those three foundational skills, then really you're going to be, you know, happy to change as tasks change and as roles change. You're curious, you'll proactively, you know, scale yourself up to take opportunities into the future as well. So those are the sort of three foundational skills and behaviors that most organizations are really assessing for. And that sets people up for success no matter what happens in the future change-wise.
And Lauren, your own opinion, like, are they inherent skills or are they taught skills?
Like, I do believe that people can constantly develop and they can adapt their behaviours. And with every new work experience, then your personality and your behaviour can change.
Yeah.
But I suppose some people probably have stronger sense of some of these than others. So some people probably need to learn a little bit more and to practice a little bit more. And some people have these just naturally.
Sure. And the reason that I was sort of a loaded question, like, is the, so a lot of our listeners, obviously human resource professionals, that, you know, a lot of them might be CIPD, a lot of them might have gone to, you know, done a degree or whatever, or master's, whatever it might be. Are we now teaching the right skills?
Probably, yes. I think we're probably teaching the right skills. And there is more and more sort of group work and practical learning built into a lot of the courses and degree courses. And then I suppose it's just a matter of keeping that going when you get into roles and working in organizations and looking at, well, where can I go next and what are the types of behaviors that I need to constantly learn and develop. You know, I think that courses have adapted to the realities of the working world, and they have kind of, it's not just everything being taught anymore. There's a lot of practical self-directed learning and group learning. So I think so.
Yeah, excellent.
Short answer.
And final thing, Laura, thanks for allowing me fire questions, which I really feel I have done. So where do you think it's going? Like, what do you think this looks like in 5 or 10 years? What do you envisage what the office was? What will that be? Or what do you think that will be?
Oh, wow. What do I think it will be? I think it will be a lot of kind of points of connection and socialization, actually. I think because I do think that the technology around collaboration, innovation, the stuff that I talked about earlier on, I do think that's going to develop. But ultimately, people like the social interaction, and people like to feel connected. You know, you need to feel that you're working for an organization as opposed to another one. So for me, I need to know that I'm working for Aon as opposed to any other organization. So that kind of connection to the culture and the values of that organization, I think that's the role of the office, is to sort of embed that and start that. And however often people want to come together, whether that's weekly, monthly, even annually, but that sense of we're here as a collective. That I think is what the role of the office is for the future, and to differentiate between organizations.
Laura, how can people get in contact with you if they want to?
Great, yeah, I'd love to hear from people. I think probably the easiest way is by email, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, .Phelan, P-H-E-L-A-N, @aon.com.
Fantastic, and we'll link that on the website details below the podcast. Laura Phelan, Director of Human Capital Solutions at Aon. Laura, thanks a million for joining us today.
Thanks, Declan. Lovely to talk to you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.